AgriTalk is brought to you by Full Scale from Helena. Grow strong returns this season with breakthrough foliar nutrition from Full Scale at Reproduction. AgriTalk is brought to you by Simplot Grower Solutions. We're in your fields and by your side. Learn more at SimplotGrowerSolutions.com. Happy National Ag Day, everybody. What are you doing to celebrate? Or do you even celebrate National Ag Day? The grain markets are celebrating with some price strength. Livestock futures are mixed. Energies are sharply lower. And ho-hum, the Biden administration is talking about another $2 to $3 trillion in spending.
Live from behind soon-to-be rain-beaded windows via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This morning we begin with a conversation with U.S. Representative Sam Graves from Missouri. Then it's Mike Steenhoek from the Soy Transportation Federation. I'm Handsome Newsman Davis Michelson, and now the host of AgriTalk, Chip Flory.
All right, Davis, hey, thank you so much, and welcome to AgriTalk, everybody. Glad that you could join us on National Ag Day. What do you think, Davis?
Well, for us, of course, every day is National Ag Day. It's
sure.
It's what we do. Nice of the Biden administration to trot that out for us, though. You know, let's throw something together for those people out there, whoever they are. You know, maybe they'll wash their hands today for Ag Day, something like that. Great.
You know,
thanks,
but while
Mr.
you're
president.
But while you're celebrating National Ag Day, you know, consider going meatless.
Yes, exactly. They're trying to kill us all. Let's think of them today.
Let's Oh, crazy.
Whatever. Crazy. Whatever.
All right. Hey, celebrate. Find a way to celebrate what you do. It's your day.
Yes.
It's
your
day.
Let's not let the moment pass. I'm just saying.
That's right.
Come on. Yes. Yes. And we appreciate all of our farmers, our listeners, those who support the industry, those who play a supporting role to the industry, not just the dudes driving tractors, the ladies driving tractors as well. You know, the ladies drive tractors these days too, Chip.
And have
for quite some time.
Yeah.
So we do appreciate you all. We really, really do. But I think we express
very much
with frequency, if I'm not mistaken.
I think we do. We don't need a special day. We do it every day. Very good. Mm-hmm. Man, we've got a lot of ground that we're going to cover today. We've got a proposed merger in the rail industry, and we're going to spend some time on that with Representative Sam Graves from Missouri. And we're going to talk with Mike Steenhoek from the Soy Transportation Coalition. Mike has been talking with some customers of the rail industry and trying to get their feel for what it might mean for agricultural markets down the road if this merger would happen. To me, it looks like there's some potential positives, but of course, when you're mm-hmm. talking about billion-dollar companies that are looking at merging, you've got to wonder what issues it could create for the marketplace going forward. So we're going to talk through some of those potential issues with Mike coming up here at the bottom of the hour. Looking forward
Very
to that
good.
Conversation.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, let's get to it. What you got in the news, buddy?
Well, Chip, Secretary Tom Vilsack signaled the USDA could detail paused farmer relief payments, quote, in the next week or so after studying various options over the last month. It's likely to include a wide range of assistance for groups that have struggled to access prior aid programs. Vilsack said USDA has been taking a look at the wide variety of needs that need to be met by resources that have been provided, Chip.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would say that he wouldn't even mention a timetable if mm-hmm. he wasn't very confident in what that timetable is.
Sure.
So there had been some speculation that it could take until maybe even early May before we would get some sort of a decision. But if Vilsack's saying within the next week or so, it's probably going to be within the next week that we'll get the decision here.
Well, and it does make sense for an incoming secretary, a returning secretary or not, to sort of weigh the balance of needs versus resources before, you know, just diving in head first.
Yeah, and don't forget, this was Stabenow. Stabenow put the pause on. As the head of the Senate Ag Committee, basically said, listen, I know that Congress passed this spending plan, the $13 billion that should probably be in agriculture already. At least that's what Congress intended before they passed it before Christmas last year. So that money has not made its way out into the industry yet. And Stabenow said, listen, we need to take a look at how it's going to be doled out and divvied up and so on. So it enough time has passed. We should get the decision.
Well, President Biden's next proposal is a two-part, $3 trillion package of sweeping policy priorities for infrastructure, clean energy, workforce development, and education spending as part of the president's Build Back Better agenda, financed in part through tax increases on corporations and the rich. The first part will be focused on infrastructure, and the second focused on other domestic priorities. The stated goals of the package, Chip, are to boost the economy, reduce carbon emissions, narrow economic inequality, and improve American manufacturing and high technology industries in an escalating battle with China and other foreign competitors. And interesting to note, this isn't a quote, but apparently AOC said, like, it's like the Green New Deal. We reported last week that there were those who were saying they're going to sneak this Green New Deal in through a back door because they can't pass it through the front door. Right. I think we're seeing that play out now with this.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That's one of the questions that I've got for Congressman Graves coming up here in just a little bit. And so we'll get into some of those details. But I like that through tax increases on corporations and the rich, I think we're also seeing what the rich is being redefined. We need to keep track of that.
Well, the recent at least $4 billion in debt relief for selected minority farmers as part of the $1.9 trillion COVID aid stimulus package is a step toward justice, said three Democratic senators who noted the next step should be passage of legislation to root out discrimination at USDA, transfer up to 32 million acres of land to black farmers, and assure producers a fair price when they sell livestock to meat processors. We were talking about this a moment ago. Increased transparency, perhaps, in the livestock markets?
I would imagine that that's what that means. And just so everybody knows, we've got a standing invitation out in Senator Booker's office for him to come on AgriTalk and talk about this proposal. We just haven't gotten a reply yet.
And this one I actually like, and we kind of saw it coming. The United States and its allies in Canada, Britain, and the European Union announced sanctions on several Chinese officials alleged to have links to what U.S. officials say is a genocidal campaign against Uyghur Muslims. China responded by imposing sanctions on a range of European individuals and organizations for what it described as severely harming China's sovereignty and interests and maliciously spreading lies and disinformation. Wow. The propaganda wing is in full swing there, isn't
full
it, baby?
Full swing there, no doubt.
Well, U.S. ag and commodity organizations continue to press the Biden administration on ag trade issues with Mexico. And finally, car makers, including General Motors and Volkswagen, are retooling their companies to make electric vehicles, although it's complex. Of course, making those vehicles means factoring in emissions associated with oil drilling, power plant smokestacks, as well as from mining metals needed for the electric car batteries, Chip.
Yeah. Yeah, what are we going to do with those car batteries, too, when they run out of capacity or ability to hold on to power?
Hey, just bury them. Just bury them real deep. Just bury them.
Make them the next inhabitants.
Battery fossils in the making.
That's right. All right, stick with us. We've got Representative Sam Graves from Missouri next on AgriTalk.
American-based and family-run, Simplot Grower Solutions knows what it takes to keep a farm and your way of life productive and thriving. It takes field-proven insights backed by trusted technologies and products that help you get the most out of every acre. It takes a local ag expert you can grow with, a down-to-earth partner focused on your success. Head to SimplotGrowerSolutions.com and take the next step with us. Simplot Grower Solutions, in your fields, by your side.
No doubt you've heard of MetLife, but did you know that MetLife Investment Management has over 100 years of ag lending experience? The MetLife Investment Management team maintains close relationships with its borrowers and can structure a customized loan with flexible terms to meet your financial needs. Looking to expand, refinance, or recapitalize? Consider MetLife Investment Management. Learn more at MetLife.com/ag.
Hey.
AgriTalk is brought to you by Bayer. For a strong start, trust the tried and true protection of Corvus and harness extra herbicides from Bayer.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm your host, Chip Flory. Got Davis Michelson with me.
Hello.
And I've got something very specific that I want to talk with Representative Sam Graves from Missouri about. Let's bring him in right now. Congressman, welcome back to AgriTalk. How are you?
Great. Thank you.
Yeah, yeah. We've had conversations on the air in the past, Congressman, about earmarks and how, if they're used properly, can be a very effective way of funding projects. And now there is a conversation happening about bringing earmarks back. What's the status?
Right now, both sides are discussing it on deciding whether or not to bring them back, at least in transportation bills.
Yep.
I tell you what precipitated this as much as anything else is that every member of Congress has a problem with the Corps of Engineers and the way they treat a lot of their projects in their district. And you can't get the Corps to do anything that members want in their districts when it comes to these projects.
Yeah. Yeah, and who knows better what projects should be tackled and handled first than the people of a district? And that's really what we're talking about with these earmarks and using them correctly. I mean, with full disclosure, complete transparency, use those earmarks to get those projects that need to get done, right?
That's exactly right, and you're talking about those things that we're talking about as well, transparency, full disclosure. Now, here's what's interesting. In the transportation arena, we still have true trust funds. We have the Highway Trust Fund, the Aviation Trust Fund, the Inland Waterways Trust Fund, the Harbor Maintenance Trust Fund. The dollars go into that trust fund, those trust funds, and they're to be used for projects within there. So once we authorize, and for instance, on the Transportation Committee, once we reauthorize a highway or a surface transportation bill, the money is going to get spent. It doesn't change in any way, shape, or form how much money is going to get spent. But the way the system is now, it's a bureaucrat that gets to make the decision on where the money is spent and not a member of Congress. So you're right. A member of Congress has a much better idea of where that money needs to go than a bureaucrat in Washington, D.C., and particularly given which administration is there. I don't care if it's Republican or Democrat. It's going to be a political process.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. For these infrastructure issues, it gives guys like you the ability to do the job that you were elected to do. So I hope for these infrastructure issues. I hope this continues to move forward. I hope it moves forward with that full transparency that we're talking about. One thing that I don't think people understand, Congressman, is that when there's an earmark out there, when it's handled correctly, what is there? Is there like four different opportunities for the committee to say, no, we're not going to do that? So it's got to jump a lot of hurdles to get past.
It absolutely does. And your name's got to be decided too. This isn't,
yes.
You know, earmarks in the past that were kind of dropped into a conference report when that earmark wasn't in the House version, wasn't in the Senate version, wasn't in any committee version, but it ended up in there as a result of a conference report with no idea where it came from. Those days are over, and they're not coming back. This will be full transparency, and your name is going to have to be beside whatever project that you're sponsoring.
Yep. Okay, good stuff. The American Rescue Plan has been passed. The next big dollar effort is going to be infrastructure, it looks like. The Biden administration expected to release its plan soon. What's the status there?
We're waiting to see what they're going to come up with. I had a meeting with the White House, and we discussed some proposals, nothing in any detail. I told the president, and he seemed to be very open to getting something that was bipartisan. I said, but if this is just a Green New Deal that is got a few infrastructure things scattered through it, then you're going to have a hard time getting any Republican support. I said, let's make this, if you're going to make this an infrastructure bill, then make it an infrastructure bill. We already have to do highway reauthorization before September. So let's do that and let's make it an infrastructure bill.
Yeah, good. And it is a real risk that this is the administration's way of advancing the Green New Deal, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And it's not even so much the administration as it is the progressives in the House and the Senate.
Okay.
That's where the real push is going to come from. And that's where it came from last year when we passed that highway reauthorization that ended up going nowhere. And we ultimately had to pass an extension. It was just a Green New Deal bill with some infrastructure in it.
Yeah. Okay. Let's talk railroads here, because the Canadian Pacific is looking at buying, or is buying, Kansas City Southern, $25 billion deal. That is, if they can get by the U.S. Surface Transportation Board, what's the likelihood of the STB passing it or allowing this?
It's hard to tell, you know, what the likelihood of that is. I would venture to say it's probably pretty good. This is going to create the only railroad that is going to go from Canada through Mexico, which the Kansas City Southern already had a large presence in Mexico, hauling a lot of grain down there, which is obviously good for agriculture. But this is going to be going both ways. And it's going to, I think it's going to be good for exports. It's going to be very good for our trade agreements when it comes to North America and moving those products much smoother and much quicker. So I talked to both CEOs about it on Sunday, as a matter of fact, and both of them were excited and pumped about it. It isn't going to hurt any of the workers. It doesn't look like the way they're going to put the companies together and the details of that. So we're very pleased, you know, at least at this point, how it's looking.
Okay. Was there any mention or in the conversation of closing down any tracks, reducing areas of service or anything like that?
Doesn't sound like it at all. And what's interesting about the merger of the two, Canadian Pacific and Kansas City Southern, is that there wasn't a whole lot of duplication, to be quite honest with you. So it's probably the reason they were seeking each other out.
Yeah. Okay. Very good. The House last week passed two different immigration bills. One is designed to, it's the Farm Workers Modernization Act. Did you support that bill?
I did not support that bill. There's just a lot of problems with, you know, all the immigration proposals that are out there. Here's the thing.
Okay.
If we would just enforce the immigration laws that we have and then talk about, some expansion of some of the visa programs, but doing it legally, we would be able to do just about anything we want. But the problem is we continue to play these games, and we don't, we're continuing to allow illegals into this country, which create all kinds of problems with that. And I don't have a problem opening up or allowing more immigrants into the United States. I just want them to do it legally. And the problem with that is all of these bills are not going down that road.
Right. Right. And I talked with Senator Grassley yesterday, Congressman, and he echoed or said basically what you said. We've got laws that are in place. We just need to enforce those laws that are there. So we need to take another look at it. The status of the Second Amendment, is it safe?
Well, I hope so. It scares me, though. It really does. This is a constitutional right to be able to keep and bear arms in the United States, and they're coming after us. They're coming after us in a big way, and these bills that they've already passed so far are going to be problems. the all background check bill that they did, you're not going to be able to give a firearm to your son without going through a background check. You're not going to be able to give it to any family member without doing a background check on them. So the problem with that is you have to ask the question, how do you enforce it? Well, right. You don't know what firearms are out there and what isn't out there. So what that leads to ultimately is registration, and that concerns me in a big way. So
I hear you.
These things do scare me. They really do.
Keep fighting the fight there, Congressman. We really appreciate you making time for us, and let's get you back on, get some updates on these issues again real soon.
Thanks, Chip.
You bet. That is Representative Sam Graves from Missouri. Wow. We covered – Davis, we can talk about anything with Congressman Graves. He covers it all.
Yeah,
all
he's
right.
Great. We should
you
get
bet.
Him again.
Come on back. We've got Mike Steenhoek coming up.
It starts with a plan. That's why America's Conservation Ag Movement is inviting you to get your farm business ready for 2021 with a free resource stewardship planning guide. Get your free guide today at agweb.com/ACAM.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from Pro Farmer.
Joining us now, Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady. Beach, much better market performance today. We've got most of the grain markets moving to the upside.
Yeah, I'm going to start in soy oil. Once again, that market just sprinting to the upside, and big upside day yesterday. Active follow through today. Bull spread in that market, so the front end is leading it, and that's causing the soybean market to rise, causing the meal market to rise. And then you talk about corn and wheat, and they're also up. So, rising tide lifts all boats type of deal across the grain and soy market so far this morning.
Yeah, that oil market front month contract gapped higher this morning. So it's, like you said, it is sprinting to the upside. But we're seeing some good following action in corn and wheat as well, right?
Yeah, definitely. And I think that following is the key there, though. They're not leaders by any means to the upside here. But, I've been impressed with the SRW market. Just doesn't really have a fundamental reason. But yet here it is actively participating with double digit gains, kind of pulling the HRW and spring wheat markets up as well.
All right. Take us over to the livestock markets. Not a lot of action in the cattle complex.
Yeah, I'm pretty quiet. Starting to see a little bit of buyer interest build in deferred live cattle futures. Maybe we'll get firmer cash cattle trade again this week. It was higher last week, but it was still within that 114-ish range or whatever. So we'll see if we can break out of that later on in the week. I don't think we'll see active trade until probably Thursday at the earliest here. Feeder cattle also quiet and choppy so far. A little bit of strength starting to develop in the hog market, but nothing too substantial by any means.
All right. Thank you, Brian. That's Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady on Markets Now. No doubt you've heard of MetLife, but did you know that MetLife Investment Management has over 100 years of ag lending experience? The MetLife Investment Management team maintains close relationships with its borrowers and can structure a customized loan with flexible terms to meet your financial needs. Looking to expand, refinance, or recapitalize? Consider MetLife Investment Management. Learn more at MetLife.com/ag.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors.
AgriTalk is brought to you by Bear Plus Rewards, helping make every part of your season more rewarding.
You know, without the music...
I was supposed to sing there, I'm sorry.
Oh, you were supposed to sing there?
Yeah, I was the bump music, and I totally forgot.
You missed your cue, dude. Welcome back. You know, the disclaimer there at the bottom of the hour without music makes it sound so official. It makes it
very
like
serious
you actually
business.
Have to pay attention
serious
to what
business.
They're saying.
I well, took yeah, it seriously yes. for the very first time.
Nothing but the best on National Agriculture Day, baby. Nothing but the best. No corners cut here.
That's it. Welcome back. Glad that you are with us on this National Agriculture Day 2021. All right, let's get into the conversation with Mike Steenhoek. He is with the Soy Transportation Coalition, joins us right now. Mike, it's good to talk with you again. How are you?
I am doing fine, Chip. Good to be with you.
You bet. You bet. We just had a conversation with Representative Sam Graves out of Missouri. We talked a little bit about the proposed merger between the Canadian Pacific Railway and the Kansas City Southern Railway. He seems to think that there are some benefits to this merger that we will realize down the road. I know that you're talking with people throughout the industry all the time, Mike. What's the initial reaction to this?
Well, kind of the initial reaction whenever you hear of another railroad merger or acquisition, there is, and I think healthy, a degree of skepticism or and concern, because you know, history has certainly repeatedly shown us that oftentimes mergers and acquisitions and consolidations within the rail industry can result in a decline in service or increased rail rates, particularly for agricultural shippers. Now, you know, that being said, the biggest concern when you hear about a merger and acquisition within the rail industry is when you have two railroads that have basically the same geographical footprint.
Right.
What that usually pretends is, oh, they're going to liquidate some redundancies. They're going to discontinue some services. And then that's, you think, well, the benefits of this merger will likely and disproportionately accrue to the shareholders, not the customers.
Right.
What's different about this one, I will say, is that the Canadian Pacific Network and the Kansas City Southern Network do not overlap. And so when you look at that, you think, well, maybe there's going to be some opportunities for certain agricultural shippers to have more access to other parts of the market. So you take a customer in North Dakota or in Minnesota or in Western Iowa that are along the Canadian Pacific Network. Now, all of a sudden, you could have more of a seamless access to the Mexican market, which is what Kansas City Southern has. What one of the things they've distinguished themselves is they have this, more than any other railroad, a real seamless access into the Mexican market. So instead of just having just more exclusive access to the Pacific Northwest, and that still will be the draw area for those areas of the country, you're all of a sudden providing more access points to other markets, to the southern part of the United States, but I think most importantly to the Mexican market. So I bottom line is, I think, again, having a healthy degree of concern is valid, but I do think there is some opportunities there that we're hopeful for.
Okay. Excellent. Excellent. Yeah. One of my initial reactions when I saw the map of their coverage areas, one of my initial reactions was they missed an opportunity to change their name to the USMCA Railway.
Absolutely. You know, that's one of the things that's going to be quite unique about this one is you'll have all of a sudden pretty seamless access between Canada, the United States, and Mexico. And
yep.
And that's something that's pretty exciting. And for, you know, some of these customers, they don't have, you know, the western part of the corn and soybean belt, it's the PNW or the PNW. Those are your options. And so whenever you can all of a sudden provide greater opportunity for the Mexican market, you know, when we, you know, a year plus ago when China demand was in the tank, there were a lot of people in some of these western states that would have loved to have had more seamless access to the Mexican market. And so, you know, anytime you can provide more access to more potential customers, domestic and international, that's a good thing. So, we're very hopeful that this particular merger will indeed provide that.
Yeah. Yeah. Excellent. Excellent. I feel like the more I've thought about it since initially hearing about it, it hasn't been that long and there hasn't been a huge amount of analysis done on this in my mind anyway, but it feels like it's going to get done, Mike. Doesn't it feel like it to you?
I think there's a really good chance of it. You look at when you have the Canadian Pacific plus the Kansas City Southern networks combined, it looks very similar to the current Canadian National Network.
Yeah.
Where you have basically this north and south spine through the United States, and then it kind of at Chicago, it branches to the east and to the west, to the east coast of Canada and the west coast of Canada. So I guess, you know, again, if I were a betting man, I think there's a good chance that it will get passed. You know, one, I do think it's important, though, mergers and acquisitions create more energy for further mergers and acquisitions. And I will say that I know of very few agricultural shippers that want more consolidation within the rail industry. So that is something to, you know, certainly keep in mind. And, you know, I think it's having a healthy degree of skepticism, I think, is very appropriate.
Right, right. But that is a good point, that that one merger can generate momentum for additional mergers down the road. But, you know, I would say that another reason that there's a good chance that this is going to get done is because BNSF or Union Pacific are not involved. If either one of those giants was involved, Mike, I don't know if it would happen.
Yeah, when the size of the acquisition increases, there becomes more skepticism. And so, you know, one of the things is, you know, for Canadian Pacific and Kansas City Southern, if they are indeed able to merge, they still will be the smallest of the. Currently, there are 7 Class 1 railroads. It's a designation based on revenue. They will still be, they would be the 6th largest. So, you know, Canadian Pacific has just shy of $6 billion of operating revenue every year. BNSF, which is the largest, has $23 billion. So it's much, much larger. So the fact that you're talking about the 2 smallest Class 1 railroads, again, that doesn't guarantee that there are not going to be problems, but it does, I guess, reduce some of the concern.
Right, right. Good point. Okay. The infrastructure plans from the Biden administration, there's some real opportunity in this, Mike, but there is also some real concern being shown by lawmakers, and not just Republican lawmakers on this, that it's there are the moderate Democrats that are also showing some concern over it, because many are concerned that it's going to be used to advance the ideas of the Green New Deal. What's your take?
Yeah, I do think that's a real concern. You know, given the fact that there are certain things that are being included in it that, A, don't have a whole lot to do with infrastructure, let's be honest. Yep. Number two, you have some of these, you know, provisions that within the Green New Deal. And again, number three is just the sheer size of this package. And, you know, I'm kind of wondering, when are we going to have trillion fatigue in this country?
Yeah.
And when are lawmakers finally going to say, you know, this isn't monopoly money.
Right.
And so that's kind of a concern. You know, infrastructure can be a real source of bipartisan collaboration if you kind of keep it pretty tight and really focus on all of the things that we all agree with: roads, bridges, ports, those kind of things that people all agree on. I would love to make sure that we keep it more focused on that. If we do, we've got a greater chance for success.
You know, we talked extensively with Representative Graves earlier about how infrastructure, if Congress is going to use earmarks, infrastructure is the place that earmarks should be used. And I'm talking about full disclosure, completely transparent earmarks. It feels to me like if we're going to advance the infrastructure, we need to advance the earmark conversation as well, Mike, because people in a congressional district know the projects that need to be addressed most, correct?
Yeah, and I think that there should be some degree of right for constituents to ask and petition for how taxpayer dollars are spent. yes. to their elected representatives. And just because you shift spending authority from the legislative branch of government to the executive branch of government, it doesn't mean all of a sudden you're practicing good stewardship. And that's kind of what we've done lately. We've shifted it to the administrative branch, the executive branch. And so, yes, earmarks can get out of control. But I do think there should be some opportunities to for the public to ask for particular infrastructure projects with transparency, to your point, with a quality, viable cost-benefit analysis, and then be able to allow that to occur. So, I think we can do both. Again, earmarks got way out of control.
Right.
But I do think there's a way to reel it in, do it in an adult way. And
right.
So I hope we can have that discussion.
Absolutely. Mike, it is always good to talk with you. Thank you, man.
Thank you, Chip.
You bet. That's Mike Steenhoek, Soy Transportation Coalition. Davis and I will be back to wrap things up here in a moment.
I'm Andrew McRae, inviting you to join me for Farming the Countryside, a farmer-focused podcast important to agriculture, and is brought to you by Pivot BioProven. Visit pivotbio.com to find a representative near you.
AgriTalk is brought to you by Dallaro Complete. Keep your operation moving forward with Dallaro Complete from Bayer.
All right, welcome back to AgriTalk. Davis and I are going to pull some highlights from today's conversations right after this industry spotlight. We're joined now by Dr. Leanne Walter, the Cattle Technical Services for Merck Animal Health in Lubbock, Texas. Dr. Walter, tell me what you do on behalf of Merck Animal Health.
So I'm a cattle tech service nutritionist. I work with producers across the Plains region, ensuring that cattle are profitable and that we supply products that fulfill their needs on their cattle operations.
Excellent. Let's go all the way down to the cow-calf producers. What should they be looking at to improve their profitability?
When we think forward to the fall and we think about maximizing the calf crop percentage, obviously, the other big portion of that, we want to wean as many calves as possible. We also want to maximize that weaning weight. And so there's a number of ways we get there, nutrition and health related. And one of the primary things that we often overlook is improving that weaning weight with implants administered at branding time.
Excellent. Okay, so if we do that on those younger calves, what kind of return can producers expect?
When we implant at branding time and implant during the suckling phase, we're looking at 5 to 10% improvement in average daily gain. So right around that 20 pounds of additional weaning weight per calf. Of course, we don't know what the future holds in terms of calf price in the fall, but we're looking at $20 to $30 return per calf that's implanted. And study after study has shown that for decades.
Excellent. Thank you, Dr. Walter. That is Dr. Leanne Walter, Cattle Technical Services for Merck Animal Health. Learn more about using implants in calves by talking to your Merck Animal Health representative or visiting RalGrow.com. Here's some important safety information. A withdrawal period has not been established for RalGrow in pre-ruminating calves. Do not use in calves to be processed for veal. For more information, please see the product label. Davis, all right, man, let's pull some of the highlights. I love the conversation about earmarks with Congressman Graves. Mm-hmm. And I was thinking about the first time that he and us had a conversation about earmarks. It was at least 2 years ago, Davis. And the first time that we talked about it, I felt like we were stepping across some sort of a line and yes. talking about things that we shouldn't talk about.
And here we are. Here we
yeah.
are.
Yeah.
Interesting then, because didn't Mike kind of come back to that point mm-hmm. and talk about, you know, the taxpayer really ought to, there should be some way to have some kind of say in
that
this,
is
right?
So accurate. That was so well put. That mm-hmm. was so well put. Yes. The taxpayer in that district should have the right and the ability to petition for a yes. project to be taken. And that is so on target. Man, oh man.
Yes.
Really, well,
that's one of those hallmarks of one of them fancy representative governments that you hear about, you know, like they used to have in the old days.
Now, that's important. What Mike talked about and the reason for the earmarks there is important. The other thing that is concerning is when Representative Graves said that he doesn't know a representative that is happy with how the Army Corps of Engineer is deciding which projects should be handled and which ones will be put off, and in other words, how the money's going to be spent.
Yep.
That, man, talk about the need for a rehaul overhaul. Thank you. That's the word that I was looking for.
Well, and with the new trillion fatigue, by the way, that was a good one. With the new $3-ish trillion infrastructure package out, it just sort of seems like a reboot of the discussion. Well, there's not a whole lot in the stimulus package about COVID. What's all this extra stuff? Well,
yeah.
Second verse, same as the first, baby, for the infrastructure package. Should we even call it an infrastructure package?
Right. Yeah, I wonder, at some point, they're going to put the job spin on it, too. I have a feeling that they will put the job spin on it. Remember all the shovel-ready projects that we talked about during the Obama administration, which frankly kind of turned into enterprise zone conversations under the Trump administration, although the enterprise zones were actually funded, you know. It feels like maybe we're going to hear how the infrastructure plan will also be considered some sort of a jobs creation package going forward. So we got to watch for that.
Yeah, and as I reported in the news this morning, I'll just read it again. The stated goals of the package are to boost the economy, reduce carbon emissions, narrow economic inequality, and improve American manufacturing, high-tech industries in the escalating battle with China and other foreign competitors.
Yeah, that sounds a lot like a jobs package is what it sounds like. One thing that we didn't talk about this morning in the news, and we might get to it this afternoon in the market news, the winter wheat ratings improved after the recent moisture that fell in HRW country. Kansas has now got 45% of the HRW crop rated good to excellent. It was 38% last week is what we had rated good to excellent. The amount of wheat rated poor to very poor is also on the decline. So we've got the trends pointed in the right direction. And when you take a look at the radar, I mean, it is central Minnesota down to New Orleans. We've got some scattered rains out there, and that dry area in Nebraska, Kansas, down into Oklahoma, absolutely receiving some much, much needed precipitation. So,
and still double digit gains in the soft red, hard red, up, I'll call it 7 cents. Even your spring wheat's up a dime on the day so far.
We'll talk about those markets later this afternoon. Angie Setzer from Citizen Grain is going to be our guest this afternoon, tomorrow morning.
It's been too long.
It has been since the goddess has been on here. And tomorrow morning, we've got a farmer forum right here on AgriTalk.